कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। ये गोपी जन वल्लभ ईरवर धारी। गोपी जन वल्लभ ईरवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन। 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 यमुना तीर वन छाड़ी। यमुना तीर वन छाड़ी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन वल्लभा ईरवर धारी। ये गोपी जन वल्लभा ईरवर धारी। यशोदा नंदन व्रज जन रंजन। 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 यमुना तीर वन छाड़ी। यमुना तीर वन छाड़ी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम Om Gyan Tamaram Dasya Gyanam Jana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militan Nina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Jai, Hare Krishna. There's a message here. Someone who owns Toyota truck and a white Honda something something.
Please remove from that spot.
Get that out of here right now. Or else. All right, so we're looking at Canto 3, Chapter 5, Vidura's Talks with Maitreya. And so it's text number 27, and I understand we're to do 28 as well. So do we, okay, we have this verse, so I assume we're looking at doing this one. Okay. Tato bhavan mahatattvam. Abhyaktat kala choditat Vigyanat matma dehastam Vishvam vyanjungstamo nuddha. So since we're doing two verses, do we get everyone to recite this one or the second one? How do you do it? Okay. Let's go to the translation. Thereafter, influenced by the interactions of eternal time, the supreme sum total of matter, called the Mahatattva, became manifested. And in this Mahatattva, the unalloyed goodness, the Supreme Lord, sowed the seeds of universal manifestation out of his body. And in the purport by Srila Prabhupada, do you want me to charade it out? What would you like? Okay. Can we just... Who's running the show here? I'll charade it. It's fun. It's more interactive. Can we just not look at it? Or just put it out somehow? Okay. All right. There. That's good. Okay, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In the due course of the impregnated material energy was manifested first as the total material ingredients. Every thing takes its own to fructify, and there the word kala choditat, influenced by time, is used herein. The Mahatattva is the total consciousness because a portion of it is represented in every one as the intellect. The Mahatattva is directly connected with the supreme consciousness of the Supreme Being. But I can't do it forever. But still, thank you. But still it appears as matter. The Mahatattva, or shadow of pure consciousness, is the generating place of all creation. It is pure goodness with the slight addition of the material mode of passion. And there, activity is generated from this point. Thank you very much. Yeah. So now we're going to concentrate on text number 28. And here it is. Sopyatshin sopyangsha guna kalatma Bhagavad Drishti Gocharaha Atmanang Vyakarod Atma Vishvasyasya Sishrikshaya. Okay, can we one of the guys to do it and then girls, and we'll go back and forth like that. All right. Sopyam sa guna kalatma. Atmanam vyakarod atma. Vishvasyasya sishrikshaya. One of the Matijis. Sopyam sa guna kalatma. Bhagavad Drishti Gocharaha Atmanam Vyakarod Atma Vishvasyasya Sishrikshaya. One of the dudes. Sopyam sa guna kalatma. Bhagavad Drishti Gocharaha. One of the Matajis, please. Sopyam sa guna kalatma. Bhagavad Drishti Gocharaha. Atmanam Vyakarod Atma. Vishvasyasya Sishrikshaya. One of the Pitajis. Sopyam sa guna kalatma. Bhagavad Drishti Gocharaha. Atmanam Vyakarod Atma. Vishvasyasya Sishrikshaya. And one more. Sopyam sa guna kalatma. Bhagavad Drishti Gocharaha. Atman Vyakara Atma. Thank you very much. Saha Mahatattva. Api. Also. Angsha. Purusha plenary expansion. Guna. Chiefly the quality of ignorance. Kala. The duration of time. Atma. Full consciousness. Bhagavat. The personality of Godhead. Drishti Gocharaha. Range of sight. Atmanam. Many different forms. Vyakarot. Differentiated. Atma. Reservoir. Vishvasya. The would-be entities. Asya. Of this. So Shrikshaya generates the false ego. Translation. Thereafter, the Mahatattva differentiated itself into many different forms as the reservoir of the would-be entities. The Mahatattva is chiefly in the mode of ignorance, and it generates the false ego. It is a plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead with full consciousness of creative principles and time for fructification. Jai. Shall we just read it all together again? One, two, three, go. Thereafter, the Mahatattva differentiated itself into many different forms as the reservoir of the would-be entities. The Mahatattva is chiefly in the mode of ignorance, and it generates the false ego. It is a primary expansion of the personality of Godhead with full consciousness of creative principles and time for purification. And purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We will not look at this, please. Okay, there we go. The Mahatattva is the via medium between pure spirit and material existence. It is the junction of matter and spirit, wherefrom the false ego of the living entity is generated. All living entities are differentiated parts and parcels of the personality of Godhead. Under, no, I, not but, is there my butt is here, I just want to mention. All right, so under the pressure of false ego, the conditioned souls, although parts and parcels of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, claim to be the enjoyers of material nature. This false ego is the binding force of material existence. The Lord again and again gives a chance to the bewildered, conditioned souls to get free. Yeah, to get free from this false ego. And that is why the material creation takes place at intervals. He gives the conditioned souls all facilities for rectifying the activities of the false ego. But He does not interfere with their small independence as parts and parcels of the Lord. Hare Krishna. Namo Shivaya Krishna Shaya Vitaraya Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Phenomena Namaste Saraswati Devi Kodavani Pucharini Niravishi Shishinya Vati Pascha Chavisha Parini. What am I going to do with these two verses? Very technical. Technicalities were presented by Maitreya to Vidura, and these two personalities exemplify the kind of like this unique relationship of teacher and disciple or student. Teacher and student, and it's guru and shishya, right? We do guru disciple course. Why isn't guru shishya course? Or teacher, anyways, Hare Krishna. They're having a discussion like they do, and they relish being in each other's company. There's a lot to say about the world. it's just the nature, instinctive nature of the human being to ask a lot of questions about how the world came about, and it's just natural. This morning, I got up and I started walking here, and the sun hadn't come up yet, but the stars were out there. And as you may all just kind of like backtrack a little bit, when you were young, when you were, and you still are, of course, but younger, okay, when you were younger, and it was nighttime, and these little twinkle, twinkle little stars out there, and many more, and you wondered, how did it get there? It's so natural to ask those questions. If you have someone sitting down or lying down next to you to answer the question, in the most simple terms, just say, well, there's a creator, you know? And this is the creation, and you are a creature, you know? There's a connection here, sort of a triangle. You are like a star. You are like a shining star. Of course, movie stars, you always get that star. Why them? Why can't ordinary these celebrities that we call them, they're not very good examples. They're not really good role models in most cases, you know? They act out scenes of love, but boy, Hare Krishna, you know, what can I say? In their own personal, private lives, not good examples. So everybody's really a kind of a star, and certainly in the eyes of Krishna, the creator, we're all kind of special. And even though there's so many of us, each one is unique. You know, I'm looking at the span of this room here, and I see, you know, people with different, you've got a nice light blue dark color. You've got a sort of a dark gray. There's a, like one of those, what if it turns luminescent orange here, which shows up in the dark. Mataji, nice sari you got. Everyone's dressed a little differently. Nobody came thinking the same way. We all have, Prue, I love your hair. It gets bigger, it just gets whiter. Like a mountain galleon. So everyone's unique. Every spirit soul is unique. And, you know, we just, usually we just count us humans. But what about when you go out into the bush and there's bugs there and they all look the same to us? But if you get really into their community, each one will see how they're distinctively different. I used to think that way about, no offense, I hope it's a PC statement, but, you know, Chinese people, they all look the same. All Oriental people look the same. You know? And then when you get to know them, it's like, oh, they're actually quite different. You know? I remember when I first got into Krishna consciousness, I was in college and I was taking a fine arts course. And some devotees came to our campus and just helped themselves to the lounge and just start talking to people, you know. Nobody invited them. They just, that's the way we were, quite bold and daring and fun, I guess, too. And one of my friends at the time, I asked her, so what do you think about those Hare Krishnas? You know, I was just trying to get approval, get green light from friends, you know. And, you know, do you think they're okay? And she said, well, they all look the same. Because they all had shaven heads and you know, poor paint on the forehead. They all had the bed sheets and everything. And they all look the same. So I got to meet five of them. And to me, because I spent a few hours with them, they all were quite distinct and unique from each other, you know. And it was one of those people was B.B. Govindaswamy, and there were other devotees, right? So he was very kind to me. He spent time with me just reading one story from the Krishna book, and it was about Krishna attracting the gopis with this flute playing. So I thought, wow, this is so damn poetical, you know. Whoever wrote that, they've got quite an amazing imagination. So those were my thoughts. But certainly we're all unique. And you know, when it comes to eating time, you know, we all have our preferences. I was sitting with the Chitananda Prabhu yesterday, and I asked him, you spend a lot of time with Prabhupada. And of course, he was in India for 11 years, you know, at Chitananda, some time with Prabhupada. And said, I understand Prabhupada didn't like broccoli. And he said, that's true. He didn't like broccoli. But then he said there was a sort of a campaign that went on around the world and brought by the different cooks, and everyone was trying to get Prabhupada to like broccoli. And it was, Palika. She came out of the room once. He liked it! So it just depends on how you prepare it, right? So we're all unique individuals, and I was really enjoying the little plaque outside there, quoting 5:18, Vidya Vinaya Sampani. You know it, let's snap it up. Vidya Vinaya Sampani, Brahmane, Gavahastini, Shuni Chaiva Swapapucha. It always works better when you stab it. It sounds more jazzy. But it's about how we are all the same. And this element of equanimity, which helps us a lot to overcome differences, it's just that it's very helpful. The humble sage, by virtue of true knowledge, has equal vision. He sees like a Brahmin, a gentle Brahmin, to be like that of a man who eats dogs, you know, like a sort of a lower conscious person. And then the other example is a Hasti, which is an elephant, and Gavi, which is a cow, and what is it, Shuni? You know, dog. They're all the same. There's five categories there. They're all the same, spiritually. But physically, we're all different. And the nice thing about differences is that makes it kind of unique. Like, this is a garland, and it's, I love the color combination. It's this, like, pinkish, you know, almost like, I hate to say, Barbie color. And then there's a green. And, but the combination is really good. In fact, I will tell you the truth. The first time I went to Ramuna in Orissa, they have these tiles in the temple room. And this is where the Kirchura Gopinath Devi is honored and worshipped. And they have these tiles with these colors. I still remember this. That's what, 1786, I went there for the first time. And they have these colors, you know, tiles with this combination, right? That's beautiful. Okay, so I think we all enjoy the differences and we all enjoy the similarities. So on my walk across the U.S., I met one fellow. It was Sunday morning and I was in Ohio and kind of like near Cleveland, Toledo, that area, near Lake Erie. And it was a beautiful sunset. It was pretty remarkable. And I was walking along the highway, and a fellow pulled over, and he said, excuse me, but do you speak English? And I said, well, yes, I do. I guess I look like I'm from Tibet or something. And I just want to give you something. So he gave me a little flyer, like the New Testament. And I said, well, actually, I have that already. You know, I have it with me in my support vehicle. So please save it for someone else. So I was kind of leaning against this car. It was nice of him to stop and talk. And I was saying that even though you're a Christian, and I'm a Krishnan or Krishnaite, there's a lot of things that we share in common. There's a lot of parallels. And I said, yes, there are some parallels, but the differences are really important. The differences. And they said, well, if we just sort of rest on the similarities, it makes us easier. It makes it easier to cultivate a kind of friendship, you know, wouldn't you agree? Like to get on the same wave, you know. And so he didn't like that. He just didn't like that. He wanted to harbor on the differences. And so the differences are very important. And then he started to say, you know, he knew something about our background. So he said something about Vishnu, which was very offensive. And I just said to him, excuse me, sir, I think our conversation is stopping right here. I hope you have a good time meditating on the wall that you built between the two of us. Have a nice day. Like, I don't have much patience with these kind of people, to be honest with you. It's very hard for me. You know, so the distinction is beautiful, the differences are nice. We have descriptions in the Brahma Samhita and other Shastric texts that help us to understand the nature of the spiritual world, which is full of variety, which is the spice of life. And then we also, devotees always take advantage of the position that we love to take. We are all spirits, we're all the same. We are not these bodies, would you agree? Yeah, I guess you're right. Okay, great. So. But why don't we merge them together? Why don't you say we have a philosophy, a tattva, a truth, and it goes like this, unity and diversity. And it's quite inconceivable sometimes to be able to embrace the two concepts which seem to contradict each other. Mm. And, you know, even in hearing Prabhupada speak or reading, sometimes he'll say some things that are kind of contradictory. But if you go through the whole gamut of the teachings, you'll understand, okay. And it's all based on the differences depend on deshakalapatra, time, place, and circumstance, and in which context, right? There's that famous time he was walking with two sannyasis, and He said, I died too, the one sannyasi. Now, a sannyasi is meant to keep traveling. He's meant to keep going and just moving from town to town and so on. So that's what I want you to do. Then he turns to the other sannyasi. So a sannyasi is someone who's very surrendered. So I want you to stay in one place and manage the local, I think it was Vrindavan. Maybe somebody's got it down. So it seems like whatever Prabhupada was saying in terms of what is a sannyasi who's supposed to be nomadic by nature is now being told to surrender, okay? And or to stay in one place. It seems contradictory, but it depends on the circumstances. It depends. It just depends. That's a nice phrase to use. Okay, so what else? Time is mentioned here. I like that topic very much, and it does come up in the teachings from Maitreya Muni to Vidura. Time is really important to everyone. It's one of the five subject matters contained in Bhagavad Gita, and time is mentioned three times. Three times. Time is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita three times, chapter 10 and chapter 11. In chapter 10, Krishna identifies with different elements in this world, and so he says, I am inexhaustible time. So that's a quality. And he says, of subduers, I am time. I am time. Then in chapter 11, where the Lord reveals his Viratrupa, his universal consciousness, he talks about time. I am destroyer of the worlds, Oppenheimer, you know? So time, I am destroyer of the worlds. These are real strong statements about how we should see Krishna in that particular form. Krishna is not limited to a deity. Krishna is not limited to prasadam, which is hard to put out to say that, you know? Krishna is not limited to a shastra. He's also identified as time. So for devotees, time is really important, right? So I guess I'll put the question to you, please. Are we on time for things that are important? Are we on time? Are we one of those cultures that is on time? What I've observed is that people who come from sort of the north, they're usually more on time, especially when they make all the clocks. Like Switzerland and Germany and those kind of people. Those people tend to be on time. I remember sitting in a GBC meeting, and one of our, the chairperson of that year, he was from Germany, and please, it was time for you know, a little break for your juice or whatever, and says, and we're coming back at such and such a time, and please be on time. Otherwise, it is very un-German-like. So we can appreciate that time factor. I think that's what Prabhupada liked, too. He liked punctuality and cleanliness when it came to worshipping the deity and so on like that. And, you know, Prabhupada picked up on some things that the British left that were good. You know? And, you know, I'm sure you've heard the saying, if you can't be on time, at least be early. So I think there's something to be said about that. And and time does destroy. Time does also create. You know, within the time factor, so many things happen. Like I haven't been here for 4 or 5 years. Somebody said since 2018, is it true? I think that was too long. But anyways, things have changed since I came back here. I think there's more grass, there's more asphalt. The house that was there, that Genevieve was living in for a while, it's no longer there. I noticed that, you know, you pick up on these little things here and there. There's more Spanish moss all over the place, and things have changed. And as I mentioned the other day, you know, there's different coloration in some of us, you know, especially up here. And more etchings, as I mentioned. But that's okay. You know, it's fun to see the changes. Time reveals a lot of beautiful things, and I think it's really important for us as a community to recognize Krishna as time, to see no difference. Right? And so spend more time on looking at your clock or on your cell phone and just see if you're on time. Right? Eventually, if we see Krishna's time, it's possible that we can enter into the timeless zone of Vaikuntha. You know, we may get there. We just might, if we just follow, baby step our way through, and Sanskrit is called shanai, shanai, baby step, gradual process. You know, climb your way up to the. I like this other sort of abrupt approach doesn't always work. Okay, surrender to Krishna. Here's my Bhagavad Gita. Surrender or kumbhipaka. You know. You know, it's better to, you know, slowly handhold someone and bring them up to Krishna consciousness. Hare Krishna. Yeah, I can tell. That's always a good sight, you know, to see man at work. We're talking about the time factor and how it's important for us to. That's my experience, is people who come from, you know, more sort of like comfy kind of temperatures, or from that to where the sun is quite penetrating and intense, they tend to be a little bit more lax about coming on time, right? And we always make a joke about that, you know, Indian standard time or ISKCON standard time. Personally, I'm kind of tired of the joke. I don't want to hear it anymore, because we shouldn't make any excuses. You know? We should try to be on time for programs or when we're meant to be there. All right, so Krishna's to be identified as such. Here we're hearing about the Mahatattva, which is a conglomerate of all the major energies, you know, which includes the three modes of material nature, and the Vina Prakriti or Ashtada, the Bhumir, Apa, Nalo, Vayu, Penmano, Bhudir, Evacha, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego. These are some major components to the physical world that we live in. And it's very interesting. We take a lot of interest in the physical world. Now when we come to Krishna consciousness, we're encouraged to realize the other world. So Prakriti is something we're familiar with, material energy. We have to get in more focused in the Brahman side of existence, the spiritual side. And hence we get acquainted with it through our sadhana, our practices of chanting Hare Krishna, our practices of taking prasadam. Probably at the top of the list is associating with devotees, coming together here. This is quite a unique thing. About 50 people sitting in a room together, hearing about God, you know, glorifying God. And it's rare. I was very impressed when I was walking across the U.S., and in some of the communities more in the Northeast, whenever there was a Catholic church, it was 8 o'clock, people would come into the parking lot, and a good number of them would come and do their little thing with Jesus. And I was in one place, we came upon Tyrone, Pennsylvania. Anybody ever heard of that? Tyrone, Pennsylvania? Great. And we stayed in an Airbnb, myself and my support guy, for a few days kind of consecutively while we were walking in that area. And you know, according to the, again, whoever measures, you know, like they were on the top of the charts, like number 3 in the U.S., something like that. So the guy who we met, we said, listen, we're monks and we don't have much, you know, for paying. So, okay, well, listen. And he said, I'll let you stay for free, but on one condition, you have to come to Mass in the morning. So we went at least just one day, and he was quite an animated character. We had a real good time. You know, when you go on these journeys, you meet amazing people. And so he introduced us to the priest, and we sat in. I was doing my japa during the ceremony. And it was nice. A lot of the local people couldn't understand, who is this creature? And talking about me. And, you know, and I had beads, and they had beads, you know. In fact, I was in one place, I went to one church in Toronto, and I was chanting on my beads. And a woman came to me. She goes like this. You know, people do this and like that, but I'm trying to understand. I'm exaggerating just a little bit. She said, "You're not Catholic, are you?" I said, "Well, I have my beads here. There's 108 here, and you've got 54. So I've got double what you've got." So going back to the church, it was an Eastern European priest who was conducting the ceremony, and it was very nice. Then the Airbnb fellow, he took us to the... We also asked him, "Can you take us to the local newspaper?" And so he did. He opens up dramatically, opens up the door, ta-da, here I am, and I've got some special guests for you. It's a traveling monk. So it was a nice experience. But I want to say something more, a little bit on the negative side of Tyrone, Pennsylvania. It's got a fantastic looking sort of like a Victorian red brick kind of downtown, you know? And I could visualize what it was at one time. A lot of the little downtowns in the U.S., they're just pretty vacant, like ghost town. It's kind of scary. Even though they put money into this, they spruce it up, interlocking on the main road and new lampposts that give it a sort of a classy look. People aren't spending much time in these places. And but now it's quite vacant. And I also, when I was walking through, I stepped into a store. It was a ribbon cutting ceremony for a new store. It was a woman that we met. She has opening up like health food products and stuff like that. So I met the main guy. I don't know what you call him, just the main guy for the county. You know, just like a political guy. What would you say? I think it was not even mayor. It was higher than the mayor. It could be governor, like somewhere. He was quite high up. And I shook hands with him and said, "So how are things doing?" And he put a smile out there, kind of a superficial smile. You know, I was talking about how are things doing in the town, the county. He said, "Not very good. Not very good." It was kind of sad to hear that. A lot of these places in the U.S. are part of the rust zone. Rust belt. And hopefully things will pick up. And hopefully things will pick up spiritually as well. You know? And that's one thing. People spend more time at McDonald's and all the fast food places than they do at church, you know, which is kind of sad. Most of those places of worship are pretty quiet. It just wakes up, oh, Sunday morning, oh okay. 1 or 2 hours, and then it goes quiet again. And maybe just some church. Starbucks, is that what you say?
Starbucks is the new church.
Oh, yeah, Starbucks. In Canada, we have called Tim Hortons. Have you ever heard of it? And they're sort of creeping in here. But that's where everyone goes for the donuts and the tin bits, they call it. And it's kind of sad. It's a feature of Kali Yuga. Less meditation, less prayer, more self-aggrandizement. You know? So what can we learn from these two verses? One thing that comes to my mind is the world is very big. The descriptions given here, and I am very small. I'm very tiny. You know? I think I might have mentioned this to this group before. There was this minister, and he'd been involved in the ministry of religion for 40 years. He says, "I've been around for a while, and there's two things I've learned. Number one, there is a God. Number two, it's not me." So this is looking at the world the way it is, and say some mornings have been kind of frigid here, and it's good. It makes you humble, isn't it? isn't it? Or if it gets too hot, it beats at your ego. It's burning and just want to stay in the AC. Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada environment. Okay. It's just humbling. That's all there is. Or if there's an attack or you get your hurricanes, I guess they're more serious than the Miami side, right? Closer to the ocean side, but it's all humbling. It's really good. It's very good. Floods, hurricanes, volcanoes, what else? Tornadoes. By the time I got to the Midwest, it was in Nebraska, and I had two brahmachari assistants with me when I was going from, you know, Boston from the East Coast to the West Coast. And we were quite excited. Oh, wow, this is tornado country. I've never seen a tornado. We were all like in that mindset. And we were talking to local people. Where are the tornadoes? And said, you don't want to see any of them. Local people are saying, you know. So, but we were kind of excited. You know, if you see something like that from a distance, it's okay. It's all right. But sometimes it comes close. And then you got to watch out. You got to watch out. So all these things are humbling experiences. We have a mantra in Canada. You know, when there's a big snowstorm and it piles up like this, and you come out of your, you know, your apartment or your house, you know, with a snow shovel, and the mantra is, no volcanoes, no earthquakes, no hurricanes, just snow. Yeah. So when, like, material reverses come at you, and Prabhupada uses that term, extremities coming at you, and of course there's the things that we have to deal with, the pain and suffering and illness and so on like that, and then hearing about the deaths of our dear bad brothers and sisters, it's very painful, but it is quite humbling at the same time. When you hear about someone who's passed away that's dear to you, you're inclined to just stop for a minute and be like we did early on, still, become still, and you start to penetrate a little bit. You start to probe into life, what is it all about? You know, and you stop busying yourself, and you have to take some moment of contemplation. My dear Krishna, that is going to happen to me, and you know, I hope I will take it well at that time. I hope my consciousness will be fairly good so I can fix myself on you. But in the meantime, this other person is gone, and I wish to offer my respects to that departed soul who did so much nice service for His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, and may that person have a good journey going back to Prabhupada. So that's those are the kind of sentiments that we need to carry. So when we come to these kind of verses that are a little bit more on the technical side, that I don't know too much what to do about them, I can just say, oh, this is very humbling, and it's kind of beyond me. And so that's, I guess that's a good thing. And there we go. So I think it's a good time for us to just open up and raise the hands and, you know, raise your legs too. I don't care. Just let me know that you're interested in repeating something that was said.
Haribol Maharaj. Very nice. Very practical.
Oh, you are very nice.
So since you spoke a little on time, I have two quick questions. One is on there is no time in the eternal world. Can you give us?
There's no time.
And they said there's no time in the transcendental world.
Oh yes. Uh-huh.
So can you give us some ideas about that? And the other one is you said the vastness of the earth. When you're walking, I mean, I feel, but I'm asking you it's like a practical experience that the earth is really vast by when you're walking. I mean, do you get that kind of idea?
Yes. I don't know if anybody knows, we have one one person, he was very much into the Padayatras as Abai. He joined in Detroit. And he did a lot before he got onto the Padayatras that went, you know, let's say global. He did a lot of study. He said that many people who have done these, like walking, you know, across vast tracts of land, said they all come out feeling the same way. And you know what that is? It's very interesting. We all come out believing in God. When they begin the trek, it's something different. Just like on the youth bus tour that had been on with Manaram, a lot of the kids that have been on the trip, the boys and the girls, they're not sure if they even believe. Some, and I'm not sure if Krishna's real, you know, to be honest with you. So they're not sure if there is a God even. But after about 3 or 4 weeks together, you know, traveling and seeing all the temples and having all this fun, attending the Rath Yatras and so on, they said, I believe in Krishna! And these are my friends. So it's like that, you know, when you go across the plains or something where there's hardly any tree, you can just see forever. Wow, how small you feel. And you know, how great is everything else? It's like, to give another example, during the COVID, I met a lawyer, and we met in the park, and he said, well, you know, I just want to let you know I'm an atheist. And I said, fine, no problem, I have a lot of atheist friends. Not a big deal. But would you consider this, okay, you are you, and you are important person. You play a major role, you do your services, and so on like this. So there's you, and there's everything else. So, while you're important, isn't it that everything else, which is much greater than yourself in terms of magnitude and dimension, isn't that something to be humbled about? So that big everything, some people call God, okay? You can call it the universe, and that's fine, okay? But that's, maybe, would you like to reflect on that a little bit? And say, yeah, I'll give it a try. There you go. So, yeah, and it was on the walk, and this is the second walk I did across Canada, and I got connected with a woman who was a multiple sclerosis patient. We got to know about each other through an article in one of the newspapers. Does anybody know what a newspaper is? They are around, you know, like a while back. But this one guy did an article considering both of us, you know. I was walking for a little bit of a different purpose to promote, you know, like go for healing of the nation. So anyways, we got to talking. And this one woman who's from British Columbia, we got on the cell phones, which was a new thing at that time. And they were expensive. So she said something, Swami, this was her tone, Swami, I heard about what you're doing. I think it's just great. And I started from New Brunswick. I'm going back to my home, to British Columbia, and I'm doing this walk, and it's great. And I'm doing this to make people aware of MS. But I didn't realize it's a spiritual thing. You know, she didn't anticipate she'd go through that kind of evolution. But she did. So it was very, very good for you. That's why I'm saying it's just very therapeutic tool for long walks, pilgrimages, which our ancestors used to do, and which we don't now. We have found better places. Disney World, Las Vegas, those kind of places. Yeah. So, I think it still holds true that take some time to travel, you know, be a nomad, you know, and it's very humbling. It's very humbling. Yeah. So that addresses the first thing that you brought up, or the second one. I forgot the first one.
Yeah, the second one is about no time in the
eternal
world.
Oh, no time. Yeah, that was the first one. Okay, so no time. I don't understand it so well, but when I get there, I'll let you know about it. I believe there's a sun and a moon, you know, and these are usual, let's say, indicators of time, that it's not going to be like what our experience is. Yeah. It's not like the sun goes down and people love to see the sunset, but it's also telling you something. Your days are numbered. More deeply, philosophically. In fact, one of the last times I was in Cleveland, they made this really nice arrangement against the lake where you can see the sun coming down, and everybody just gathers there on these steps, which were arranged at the edge of this park. And it's quite a lot of people. I was really impressed. And they just come to walk, and then as the sun is about to go down, they just sit there, and once it's just done, once it's done beyond the horizon, they all clap like this. It's quite nice to see that kind of thing. And those are humbling activities that I think people should undertake. We had another question here.
Thank you, Maharaj, for coming here after a few years. Maharaj, I had maybe a question that's a little more on the personal level. Permission?
No problem. You've got nothing to hide.
I was wondering that you started walking. Was there some inspiration because of your name, or?
I didn't think about the meaning of my name until the first day of my walk. And you know, it was I had carried this name, Prabhupada gave, and then it was on the first day. I had covered 47 kilometers already. That's a lot. That's a lot of miles, right? And it just dawned on me, oh, Prabhupada knew all along that I would do some bhakti on the path. So, was that the motivation? Many motivations. One was Prabhupada's centennial was coming up, you know, so about 496. So I thought, let me do something special. There were other people are doing other grandiose things, and I thought maybe I should try something too. And just more personally, it's in the book. I wrote a book called The Saffron Path, and maybe we'll try to get some copies here to the community. Basically, 95 was a rough year for me personally. You know, not my sadhana was impeccable, no problem there. But there was just a lot of gossipy dynamics going on. You know, I decided I've got to make a change. And someone, an astrologer, said, you are going through your Rahu and Ketu right now. And those are like dark planets. And I thought I should, you know, kind of like bend low, you know, don't try to make a big deal about myself in any way. Let me, take a little bit of a different route and just let me go on a nice long japa walk, you know, and be a swami, like the very good sannyasis have traditionally done. So I thought it was going to be a lot of fun and adventure. It's nice to see things up close. You know, like most of you are living in a rural area, but my analysis would be a lot of us are not getting very close because we're in a car. And we go from a car into a building. From a building into another building, and from a building into a car again. So you're not smelling what is to be smelled. You're not feeling the textures of the earth, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to get out there and see it. See Krishna for what he is. I wanted to understand him more, being the air, being the water, all those kind of things. And I just wanted to get more in touch with him. See that the trees or the hair is standing on them. Yeah. So that's about it. And I actually wanted to get more in touch with the media, because at that time we had sort of a bad name, you know. And there's child abuse issues had come up, and it was in the news. So I thought, let me go out there and do something positive and make a change. Let people, first of all, we were off the radar in the 80s. We were so much present in the 60s, 70s. About 1983, we were off the radar. Whatever happened to the Hare Krishnas? You know? So I thought, let the public know that we're still kicking around. And we're doing things like walking for the nation. You know, like the lines that I used when I was walked across the states, I said, I'm walking across America. This is what I was telling Janus. I'm walking across America to make it great again. Maybe it's time to do it again. Because it got worse. We're such a polarized people. And it's the same thing in Canada. We have a prime minister, sorry to say, that he's not doing a good job. And it's global. You know, look what happened during COVID. You know, everybody's were so divided. And it was almost like some people say, you know, if you don't believe in what I believe, then I'm not going to talk to you again. You know how childish is that? But that kind of stuff is going on. Come on. You might have a difference of opinion. And I remember there was a political campaign, race was on, and I dare not say anything to any devotees when I was walking, you know, about my preference, you know, in this regard, Hillary or Mr. Donald. And I dare not say anything because devotees were very passionate both ways. You know? And I don't think personally we should get so consumed by these matters. It doesn't matter how much a conspiracy theorist you are, which Prabhupada was, you know, he didn't let him eat him up. You know? So, you know, again, he's given us some direction by how he handled these things. Anyway, so that's my answer. I went for many reasons. And also, a little bit more on the light side. You know, when I visit, sometimes people give the traditional foot bath thing. I say, well, I didn't do anything. My feet are clean. You know? But when you actually go up walking, your feet get dirty and your legs are tired. So now I can justify having foot baths. Yeah. And another big thing, you stay at the temple, the food is always rich. It's a killer. It'll kill you. You want diabetes? Stay in a Hare Krishna temple. Okay. So therefore I thought, let me walk and eat what I want to eat and at the times that I want to eat. You know? Right. So all those reasons. There's probably 108 reasons for that. Anything else? I know it's getting a little bit late.
Yeah, just late.
Okay, so thank you very much. And what can I say? Vanja Kalapatarudhyastra, Vibhasan Vidyavata, Patitanam Pavanevyo, Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha.